Hi everyone, Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. Summer has officially started, June is almost over, and that means the second half of the year is about to begin. The latest CIO House View update was published last week, and joining us for today for the CIO Strategy Snapshot to share the outlook as well as the main investment implications, glad to welcome back Jason Dreho, the head of asset allocation for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office. Jason, thank you for dropping by on this Monday morning. Welcome back and looking forward to our conversation today.
Good morning, Dan. Happy Monday. Good to be here again.
So, Jason, to begin, as we look out over the next, let's say, 6 months, what events are set to take place that will not only determine the investment landscape through year-end, though also shape expectations for the year ahead, 2025?
Well, there's a few that jump out immediately in the U.S. You know, the presidential election certainly will be a main focus. I think it's going to pick up attention just this week with the first debate, unusually early this time. Another key sort of story or thing that's going to change, impact the markets in the second half of this year is the Fed starting to cut rates, presumably starting to cut rates. Our expectation is that they will do so in September. But that will be a key story, is like, what does the Fed do starting the second half of this year? And the third broad theme that we highlight in the second half outlook is kind of further advancements in AI. It's really been a story for the past year and a half. If you look at market performance for the first half of the year, it's still very much dominated by AI kind of enabling the companies. That story, I think, is likely to continue. The interesting thing about the second half of the year is that in some way the debates will be less about what happens in the second half of the year versus how do these factors, the election, the Fed starting to cut rates, AI developments, impact the outlook for 2025 and beyond? Because then the macro picture for the second half of the year is relatively narrow in terms of what investors assume, and with growth moderate, inflation coming down. You know, the Fed may or may not cut rates, but it's either between 0 and 2. It's a pretty narrow range. As we look beyond the implications of policy changes, AI development, that's really going to become a story for next year and beyond. So that's another key element of these topics are not just happening this half of the second half of the year, but where they're going to play out in the coming years. That's kind of what the debate is going to take place the second half of this year.
So with that backdrop, Jason, let's dive further into these focuses, perhaps starting with expectations for lower rates. Now, I will note that in your latest blog, that titled The End, Not the Beginning, you do write that the investment outlook hinges more on the path of rate cuts than it does on when the Fed will start with rate cuts. So with the Fed likely to start on that path in the months ahead, how do you think investors should prepare accordingly?
Well, we do think the Fed's going to start cutting in September, although it's a fine balance between, frankly, September and December. The market is, kind of closer to where we are, pricing nearly 2 cuts this year with about a 70% chance in September. The Fed's median dot plot suggests it's not going to happen until December. Whether the Fed starts September or December doesn't make much difference, as I alluded to in this blog. It's really the path thereafter. Like, will they cut 3 times and then stop? Will they cut once a quarter for 2 straight years to get to their estimate of sort of a terminal or neutral rate? I think these are, again, sort of broad questions that will be debated in the second half of this year. I think just thinking about the context of the markets, what's most important is that ultimate path, not necessarily the starting point. Back in January, the market was pricing for nearly 7 cuts this year, starting in March. Now, at the midpoint of the year, we think the market's down to less than 2, and the Fed's basically saying December as the first cut. Yet all that hasn't stopped the S&P 500 from going up 14, almost 15%, at the halfway mark of the year. So again, it's more about the path thereafter and sort of what the economy does thereafter as opposed to the starting point. But they are coming, and it's not just in the U.S. We've already seen the ECB cut rates, the Swiss National Bank, the Bank of Canada. So other major central banks are starting, and others more will join them. So the path is for these policy rates to go lower. It's just more a question of how much and how soon. We'd expect that the Fed is going to start again, we're saying the September timeframe. What we also know is that the markets have been sort of, and the yields have been sort of tracking rate expectations for the policy rate, not just when they start, but over the next couple of years. So you can see the 10-year oscillates in parallel fashion with the market pricing for where the Fed funds rate could be at the end of 2025 or 2026. So as those expectations change, it's going to impact the kind of markets right now. Ultimately, we do think, though, that this is a good time to be positioning for lower rates, not just, as you said before, kind of managing liquidity or buying quality bonds. If rates are going lower, yields are probably going lower across the curve with them. That means thinking about transitioning from cash, kind of a cash equivalent holdings, money market funds, into higher quality bonds, whether it's corporate or government bonds, because if rates go lower, even if you can't get the timing right, this is not a bad entry point. And sort of by extension, you know, positioning for lower rates also applies to equities. There are bond proxies that also will tend to do well when rates are going lower. So just think broadly that the direction of travel for rates is probably lower for the rest of this year versus higher. And think about sort of how you want to position your portfolio for that.
So, Jason, another focus has been artificial intelligence, AI. As our listeners know, AI has been a key driver of equity returns throughout the course of 2024, and that is expected to continue. So, Jason, how should investors think about gaining exposure to this AI theme?
Well, just to put in context how significant this theme has been, there are six stocks, NVIDIA, Microsoft, Amazon, Apple, Meta, Facebook, or Apple, or Alphabet, which is Google. They've been responsible for 65% of the global equity market's total return since the launch of ChatGPT at the end of November 2022. Not just U.S. equity markets, but global equity markets, basically two-thirds. That's sort of enormous for six companies. Now, in order to sort of kind of make sense of all this hype and what's going on, our team has recently published a report on AI, do sort of a deep dive. And the way they suggest is to think of the AI value chain in three different layers. There's an enabling layer, it's the semiconductors, cloud, data centers. This is what's getting a lot of attention. This is kind of the companies I mentioned. That's where they focus. Also power supply. Running these AI models takes a lot of energy. You're seeing companies in the energy space, the power, like the utility space, that are benefiting under the assumptions that they have to ramp up power production. So that's the first layer, is enabling. The second layer is the intelligence layer. These are the large language models that ultimately the basis of a lot of the applications. And that's the third layer, the application layer. So AI is servicing specific use cases, such as Copilot in Microsoft Office and coding assistants. So thinking about those three layers, that's how we, distinguishing all these different pieces to the AI puzzle. And therefore, thinking about where do you want to be investing, overall. So ultimately, what we have more conviction is that, there's a lot of CapEx going on for the major tech companies, upwards of $200 billion this year, like a big increase over last year, like a 35% increase just last year. And that's kind of the enabling layer, whereas the monetization of kind of an application layer really has been pretty limited so far. And you see the market sort of differentiate between these different aspects. So this continued robust capital investment that's going to drive strong earnings growth for the companies in that enabling layer. And so as a result, a few things that we think investors should be doing is making sure that they, one, have sufficiently invested in this AI story, given how significant it is. Second is to tilt towards this enabling layer. That's kind of offers the best mix of, valuations, earnings growth, and visibility on earnings growth, and strong competitive positionings. And then the third thing to consider is that, the mega caps are really the kind of the core to the AI story. Ultimately, we expect the AI market to be dominated by, in some way, like an oligopoly of these vertical integrated kind of companies that can play along the entire value chain. So in some sense, kind of the big gets bigger. That's kind of what we can see thus far. That could evolve over the coming years, but right now that's kind of the general advice is that what we have for the AI space is to make sure you're invested, think about the companies that are going to be most beneficial for this enabling layer, and recognize that, it is sort of a market where scale matters, and the biggest firms have that scale.
The other focus to spend some time on, that being the 2024 election day right around the corner. You did mention how we have the first presidential debate coming up later this week on Thursday. How, Jason, might investors want to think about managing risk in anticipation of potential market volatility surrounding the election?
Well, it's still very much a coin toss to some extent. It is leaning more towards former President Donald Trump, winning the presidency, and also towards what we think is sort of a red sweep where the Republicans get the presidency, but also full control of Congress with the Senate and the House. That could tilt as a result of the debate one way or another, like either further enhance that or kind of get it back to closer to 50-50. In the second half outlook and also in a forthcoming Election Watch report, we assign a 45% probability to this red sweep scenario, and a 40% probability to, President Biden, getting reelected, but having a divided Congress where the Republicans get the Senate and the Democrats get the House. So basically those are the two scenarios we think are the most likely, you know, consequences. Pretty different, big difference in potential policy actions on both fiscal policy, taxes, regulatory matters, tariffs and trade. So as a result, you know, what we'd expect is there's going to be volatility in the marketplace. And you can see that in the options market, where you can kind of look at, you know, volatility for the equity markets and rate markets on a one-month-by-one-month basis going all the way through year-end. And there's a bit of a kink in these volatility curves around the October-November timeframe, which is consistent with the markets expecting volatility to spike at that time point, with the outcome of the election. So that's something just to want to kind of generally be prepared for. When it comes to what you should do about it as an investor, one thing is, first of all, you know, don't let your political beliefs alter what you think you should do in your portfolio. You vote at the ballot box, not with your portfolio. Instead of, I kind of also say, you know, vote with your heart and invest with your head, because oftentimes people let the politics get in the way of making prudent investment decisions. Within equities, we think about, you know, different implications. For example, in a red soup scenario, consumer discretionary in the renewable sector could suffer. Discretionary already faces challenges from, you know, sort of a slowing spending on consumer goods. That could get further pressure if, you know, tariffs are increased. Similarly, kind of renewables are at risk in a red sweep scenario because they're likely to get some lower government support. Conversely, financials could do well in that situation because of lower kind of regulation. And the final thing to kind of maybe think about in terms of managing that volatility is that you can use the options or structured products to kind of manage that sort of volatility, that uncertainty that allows you to hedge downside risks without giving up all the upside. And this is not a bad time to be doing it because vol overall is still relatively inexpensive.
Jason, before we close out today, in consideration of the July UBS House view now available, anything else in the way of final thoughts or takeaways, especially as it pertains to positioning considerations?
Well, we did make some changes to our preferences this month. One of them was to close a preference for small cap stocks relative to large cap in the U.S. This is a recommendation we've had on for a number of months, and frankly, over the past, you know, 4 or 5 months, it just hasn't played out the way we'd expected it. You know, we thought as rates go lower that small caps, all else equal, should be beneficiaries. And just even in the past few weeks, that hasn't been the case. On a more fundamental level, we'd expected, you know, earnings revisions for small caps to start to kind of pick up. But they've been mostly flatlining for the time being, well as for large cap companies, they've been continuing being revised higher. A lot of that is due to these large cap tech companies that have been exposure to AI. That's opened up sort of a gap in their earnings results and earnings expectations, and that's one of the reasons why small caps have underperformed. We don't expect that fundamental driver to shift anytime soon. And then right now, I think investors, given sort of some growth uncertainty that's taking place in the market, I think they're cautious about, you know, looking to market parts of the market, the equity markets that are more cyclical, you know, riskier, small caps are like that, more economically sensitive, and preferring to skew towards kind of higher quality companies. Only once there's a clear rotation towards or belief that we have a almost Goldilocks macro environment with growth being solid, inflation coming down, and the Fed is willing to do some almost proactive insurance cuts to maintain that environment, small caps can do well in that environment, but that doesn't look like it's in the cards, at least in the near term. So that was one trade change we made. We've also upgraded gold to most preferred. You know, in light of a lot of geopolitical uncertainty, gold's an attractive diversifier. You know, there's a lot of concerns about geopolitical polarization, inflation, very large U.S. fiscal deficits and debt. All these things kind of support, you know, the price for gold in absolute terms, but it certainly has a hedge for a lot of these different kind of risk events. And then finally, I would just touch on, you know, a couple of changes to our key messages and focus. I already alluded to one of them in terms of positioning for lower rates. We had sort of two messages before that were manage liquidity and buy quality bonds. Effectively, those have been combined to be into this position for lower rates. Now that rate cuts either happening outside of the U.S. or likely to kind of happen, you know, quite soon, that, you know, preparing for and positioning for this kind of lower rate environment is one message. On the equity side, we'd recommend sort of optimize tech exposure. We've narrowed that to be more specific to seize the AI opportunity for all the reasons I alluded to in a previous answer. And then another one was to kind of the position for a broadening rally. In light of kind of the macro environment where there's concerns about growth, investors are looking to instead kind of get more into the quality stocks. So our guidance instead is to, you know, seek quality growth. You know, these are, you know, quality companies that can, you know, perform well in different environments, particularly when there's concerns about the economic cycle, where things like small value, cyclical stocks tend to kind of maybe not do as well. So those are some of the key changes in terms of the preferences: small to neutral, gold to most preferred, position for lower rates, seize the AI opportunity, and seek quality growth.
Well, Jason, thank you for dropping by Top of the Morning to kick off another trading week and to keep our listeners as well as our clients current on the thinking when it comes to a market outlook as well as positioning considerations from the UBS Chief Investment Office. So wish you a great week ahead, Jason, and look forward to picking back up with our conversation again soon.
You're welcome. Have a great week.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights, at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management Business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/working with us. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.